It was hard to mobilize 12 men from covert location to covert location, even wearing their best camouflage. And this particular day, the challenge was breaking into a gated vineyard. And so one after another, the 12 spies climbed the fence as quietly as possible. No noise, no sudden movements. I mean, this was a risky assignment. But some rewards were worth the risk. I mean, they were starving, and so they'd seen this lush vineyard coming for miles as they descended down the mountain. They'd been embedded for nearly 6 weeks behind enemy lines, and this was their last mission, and they were going to make the most of it by taking a moment to enjoy some of the spoils. They were planning to eat as many grapes right there in the vineyard as they would bring home to their families. Now, they'd managed to remain undetected behind enemy territory for the duration of their stay, a 40-day reconnaissance mission, gathering information, trying desperately not to get caught. They'd gathered soil samples, they'd done some demographic studies, they had inspected the enemy defenses, collecting data, making detailed observations about the strengths and weaknesses of the enemy soldiers, the city walls, the fortresses. They'd gathered the information, and now they were on their way home, back to their families. I mean, they hadn't bathed much, they hadn't slept well, they didn't have much to eat, which is why this particular vineyard was such a sight for sore eyes. I mean, look at these grapes. Some of them were the size of golf balls, which was good news on the one hand. They were delicious and juicy and filling to eat. But on the other hand, it confirmed their biggest concern about this whole secret mission. Large grapes meant large people. The land was filled with giants. And the majority of the spies in this vineyard were paralyzed by fear at the prospect of going to battle with these oversized warriors. But two of them had no fear. In fact, one of the spies named Caleb, he couldn't even concentrate on the grapes. While his 11 friends were indulging, I mean, he just kept looking back over his shoulder at the hill country that they had come from. There was a mountain fortress city up there, Hebron. And he knew his history enough that he knew that that region was where the ancient patriarch of his people, Abraham, had set up camp before there were any buildings or inhabitants. And when they'd been up there, a deep purpose had been planted in his soul. God had been stirring in him. He knew that that land belonged to his people and it would belong to him someday. And yes, it appeared impenetrable. And yes, that's where the giant warriors lived. But God stirred something in his soul about that land. And so while Caleb was lost in his daydream, the other guys got spooked and they started moving quickly. Someone was coming and they were about to get caught. And so they grabbed the biggest bunches of grapes that they could find, chopped them off the vine, passed them over the wall, found a long straight branch and attached the bunches of grapes to it so that two people could carry it between them. And they started making their way back to safety, to their families, to a wandering nation eager for news. When they finally arrived at the border and crossed over, after some joyful reunions with their families and friends, their leader, Moses, asked them to make a report about the land that had been promised to them by God. Now remember, at this point, the Israelites had been wandering in the desert for about a year. 1 year. What should have been an 11-day journey from Egypt to the promised land took them a year. Let's just say God took them on the scenic route. And when they were finally standing at the edge of that land, ready to go in, it all depended on the report of the 12 spies. What would they say? Well, the report started out very positive. The land is good. It's flowing with milk and honey. I mean, look at these grapes. The people oohed and aahed. And you ask, well, why were milk and honey and grapes such a big deal? Well, have you ever tried to feed 1 million people in a desert? They'd been drinking water from rocks. They'd been eating this flaky substance called manna that dropped down out of heaven. And so they would mash it up into a paste and they would make it into cakes. And do you know what this word manna actually means? It just means, what is it? So when you've been eating, what is it for a year? Milk and honey and large grapes sound awfully good. But then the 10 nervous spies took over the meeting. And they said, but the giants are big and the walls are thick and the weapons are sharp and there's no way we can go in there. We'll be like grasshoppers getting stomped on by their big boots. And they got everybody worked up into a frenzy. It was like one of our old church annual meetings about 20 years ago at Grace. But then Caleb and Joshua stood up and they pounded the gavel a few times. Attention, attention, attention. Caleb says, here's my recommendation. Let's go in at once and occupy the land. We are able to overcome it. We can do this, guys. We've been homeless for a solid year. A year. and we have God on our side. Don't you remember the Red Sea? Don't you remember the plagues? Don't you remember when Moses stood up on that hill with a stick over his head and we won the battle? That's our God, and he's on our side. And so let's go take the land. But in their camp, in their tents that night, the grapevine came alive. With all the fear-mongering and the people crying and wailing themselves to sleep, they woke up the next day and they refused to move. Roberts rules, majority wins, 10-2, we're not doing it. You see, they messed up when they formed a committee to study what God had already told them to do. God had said, I will give you this land, but they didn't have the faith to step into that promise. Moses was horrified. God was very angry. And so God told the people that because they displayed this lack of faith, that they were doomed to wander in the desert for 40 years. And in that time, the entire adult male population, except Caleb and Joshua, would die. This included Moses. But God made a promise to Caleb. He pulled him aside. He said, Moses said, my servant Caleb, because he has a different spirit, did you hear that? A different spirit, and has followed me fully, I will bring into the land into which he went, and his descendants shall possess it. God said, I'll be faithful to that stirring that I put into your soul, Caleb, and I'll give you Hebron. And Caleb said, how about now, Lord? I want it now. And God said, trust my timing, son. My promises are good. And so as they stood there at the border, face to face with God's promise for them, that promised land, the pillar of fire that was leading them made a 180-degree turn and led them back into the desert because of their lack of faith. We're going to fast forward the story 45 years. How old are you? I mean, you don't have to shout it out right now or anything, but think about how old you are right now and add 45 years. Some of you can't count that high. The majority of us will be gone in 45 years. I will be 90 if I make it. 45 years. The Israelites had wandered for 40. And after Moses died, Joshua assumed leadership of the nation. They'd finally entered the promised land, and they'd won about 5 years' worth of battles. And so Joshua is finally going to assign the different regions of this new promised land to different tribes, and people are going to inhabit their new country. And so Caleb, who was 40 back there during that first spy mission, he's now 85. We've got an old guy theme going on in this series so far. So he's 85. That's 45 years since God promised him the hill country. And Caleb's learned some lessons about perseverance from his time in the desert. You know, some of you need to hear this today. At some point or other, if you're going to get to know God, you can count on it as a guaranteed kind of thing that you're going to log some time in the desert. The desert's a very important place in the Bible. Moses went into the desert even before he was leading Israel. Elijah went into the desert. Jesus himself, before his ministry, started to spend some time in the desert. And one of the key spiritual disciplines that you need to learn in the desert is perseverance. You know, we love our goals, we love our strategies and gaining ground and making advances, but did you know that sometimes the most spiritual thing you can do is to persevere? Deserts come during those times when your heart aches with hurt or loss, the times when you're so fatigued and even sleep doesn't refresh you, the times when you long for something. I mean, we heard Jared and Michelle's story, the times you long for something, and as best you can discern it, it's a good thing. It's not a selfish thing. It seems like God could grant it so easily and answer your prayers, but he doesn't. Sometimes your season in the desert gets triggered by an event. A relationship shatters, an opportunity tanks, a diagnosis comes to light. Or maybe you cherished a dream for years and you looked forward to the day when it would come true, and you worked and you prayed toward it, and one day you realize that it hasn't come true so far and it doesn't look like it ever will. And so it dies, and part of you dies with it. Sometimes the desert comes for no discernible reason at all. And in those times, even faith is hard. You pray your heart out, but there's no sense of God's nearness. You're confused. You wonder why, but you receive no answer. Your spirit, it feels like a dry and barren place. So that's the desert. Some of you have been there. Some of you are there right now. If you're in the desert right now, you need to know something. God has not forgotten you. You have not been abandoned. Caleb is a supernatural desert hero. What's his act of heroism? He persevered. It took 45 years for God to answer his prayer. Today, we wouldn't last for 45 days, maybe not even 45 minutes, maybe not even 4 or 5 minutes. We hate to wait. And so we quickly decide that prayer is purposeless and God is powerless because we're an impatient people. But we're going to pick up the story of Caleb, the spy, in Joshua 14. You can get there now in your Bible or device. And there we're going to get some clues from Caleb about how to persevere when you're in a desert. Because the question that he needed to answer and the one that you and I need to answer in our desert is the question, can I persevere? I mean, can you walk with God even when it's hard, when it costs more? Can you wait on God until he moves the mountain? Can you keep your commitment even when it's easier to give up? Can God count on you to stay strong until the end? Can you do the right thing no matter how you feel? Can you persevere? That was Caleb's test in the desert. Remember, as we catch up with this story, that they've been in the promised land for about 5 years now, after wandering for 40, and they're dividing up the land. And so pick it up in Joshua 14:6. And then the people of Judah came to Joshua at Gilgal, and Caleb said to him, now I know we're just a sentence in, but I need to pause. Can you imagine being Caleb and Joshua right now? I mean, they're at Gilgal. The other mention of this spot is Joshua 4, 10 chapters earlier, when they'd first crossed into the promised land, the Jordan River parted. And I know it doesn't sound so incredible as the Red Sea, but it's still a pretty great miracle. It's a reminder that God was in control. And so they bring the Ark of the Covenant across the Jordan River, and Joshua told them that while you're down there on the dry riverbank, pick up 12 stones from the bottom of the river, and we're going to put them up as an altar on the other side in the promised land. And so they marched across. They'd won all these victories, but now they find themselves back at this spot near that altar with the 12 stones, and they're feeling a little nostalgic. Remember, Caleb and Joshua are 25 years older than anyone else around. Their whole generation of peers has died. Think of all the funerals that they had to attend. All their peers are gone, and only these young punks are left in their place. And so Caleb walks up to his old friend. He puts his arm around him, and he starts to reminisce. He says, you know what the Lord said to Moses concerning you and me. You remember that? I was 40 years old when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to spy out the land. And I brought him word as it was in my heart. But my brothers who went up with me made the heart of the people melt. And so he's remembering. He says, remember when we were spies? Remember the giants and those huge grapes in that vineyard? Remember how those other 10 guys spread fear like a disease among the people when we got home? And then he says, yet I wholly followed the Lord my God. And Moses swore on that day, saying, surely the land on which your foot has trodden shall be an inheritance for you and for your children forever, because you have wholly followed the Lord my God. Now notice, Caleb's recounting this conversation like it happened yesterday. It actually happened 45 years ago. And he brings the whole story back around to this promise of God on his behalf that day. And he's worn this phrase like a banner. It's his personal mission statement. He probably stuck it up on his mirror and recited it every morning. It says, I will wholly follow the Lord my God. 6 times the scripture says this of Caleb. He followed God fully. Literally, he was filled with pursuing. His heart was so set on following God that it didn't have room for any other competing choices. And so I think this brings us to the first lesson from Caleb in the desert. And that is, when you're tempted to quit, go deeper. I don't know about you, but if I was Caleb, I'd be tempted to quit in the desert. If I had my dreams put on hold for 45 years because of someone else's bad decisions, I'd be tempted to throw in the towel. I mean, right from the beginning, when that pillar of fire turned around and headed back into the desert, Caleb was probably like, no, 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 no. And 1,000 times after that, he was probably tempted to give up. I mean, I was thinking about it this week. Here's how the process of giving up typically goes. This isn't scientific or anything. This is just from my observations. So you see an experience or something negative happens to you. You start to question everything. And then you get discouraged. And then you start complaining. And then you build destructive alliances with negative people who confirm your negativity. You enter into a cycle of despair of some kind and you quit. People do it all the time. And this cycle of despair is in full effect when you're in a desert. I mean, your marriage heads into a desert season. Your faith becomes dry. Your career unfulfilling. Your ministry at church is not as satisfying as it once was. And pretty soon, whether God was in it or not from the beginning, you just want to quit. But notice the first thing that Caleb does. He remembers God's promise. He leans over to Joshua and says, "Hey, old friend, remember what God said about you and me?" You see, part of going deeper is remembering what got you there. And God's promises become our certainty even in times of uncertainty. 2 Peter 3:9 says that God isn't slow in keeping his promises, but he is patient. And so when it appears to you that God's taking his good old sweet time, he's actually preparing you for what he's already prepared for you. It's like when you're on an airplane that's ready to land, but instead it starts coming down, but then it starts going in this holding pattern. And you look out the window and you can look down there and you see the destination right there, but you're stuck in the plane. And you're like, "God, can we land this plane? God, can I at least get a parachute? I can see the destination right there." But you have to remember that he doesn't put you in a holding pattern to punish you, but to protect you. Sometimes the conditions aren't right for landing. And so he's seeing the instrument panels that you can't see. And he says, "You know, you're not ready for this yet. And so I'm going to have to take you around one more time." And you're saying, "God, no, that guy is perfect for me. He's the man of my dreams. And yeah, he's not a Christian. And yeah, he's got some anger issues, but I can change him." And God says, "Let's circle around one more time. We're not quite ready to land there just yet." Or you say, "God, I've been out of a job for a year now and I'm done waiting. I feel like a failure. And this job offer looks right for me. I'm going to make a ton of money. And yes, I'll be away from home a lot, but I'm desperate." And God says, "We're going to take this around one more time. We're not ready to land here quite yet." Or, "God, we want desperately to have kids, and we see all these losers around us having kids, and you're blessing them, and you're not blessing us." And he says, "We're going to circle one more time. I'm seeing something that you can't quite see." You know, Romans 5 says that perseverance produces character, and character produces hope, which means that there are things that God teaches us that he can only teach us in the desert as we learn to persevere. And sometimes, get this, sometimes God makes himself less accessible to us so that we will dive deeper to find him. He's trying to draw us into places where we haven't been before. You know, God's not nearly as concerned with where you are, what job you get into, what house you buy, what relationship you pursue, than he is with who you are becoming in the process. Sometimes the trials that he's putting you through will help to perfect something inside of you that isn't fully formed yet, and that he couldn't do any other way. And so instead of giving up, instead of getting discouraged in the desert, Caleb went deeper. He was filled with pursuing his God. He wholly followed the Lord his God. So what does that look like for you if you're in a desert today? Don't quit. In fact, just the opposite. Go deeper into God's word, deeper into prayer, deeper into Christian community. Don't give up. Don't fall away. There is supernatural perseverance available that will help you to reach the finish line. Let's pick up the story in verse 10. Caleb says, "And now, behold, the Lord has kept me alive, just as he said, these 45 years since that time that the Lord spoke his word to Moses, while Israel walked in the desert. And now, behold, I am this day 85 years old, and I am still as strong today as I was the day Moses sent me. My strength now is as my strength was then." Don't you love this guy? He was 85, and he says, "I'm still as strong today as the day Moses sent me out there. I'm still in the game. I've supernaturally persevered. Now bring it on." He's delusional, right? I mean, you don't see many 85-year-olds on the cover of Muscle magazine. At 85, things are drooping and dropping. Your bones start to lose their calcium. They get brittle. Your skin starts to lose its elasticity and shrivels up. Age spots begin to multiply. The weight starts shifting from the poles of your body toward the equator. Hair stops growing where you want it to and boldly goes places that hair has never gone before, you know. But Caleb's like, "Bring it on." I pictured Jack LaLanne. You remember this guy? He invented the power juicer before juicing was a thing. He'd come on those infomercials with his super tight sweatsuit that was way too revealing. And he'd be doing push-ups. He'd come over to the host and start, you know, incline pressing her over his head. He was like 93 years old saying, "I've never been stronger." Well, that's Caleb. That's Caleb. It leads us to lesson two from the desert, that when you're tempted to get fragile, grow stronger. I bet if you pressed Caleb and said, like, "Hey, go jump over that vineyard wall again like you did when you were 40, he'd look back at you and say, "Listen, I'm a different kind of strong." See, in his waiting on God, he had become strong of soul. His faith, his boldness, his courage, they were never stronger than they were right now at 85. You see, logging time in the desert can beat us down. People get exhausted and frustrated, tired. They get complainy and angry. It can make us fragile, physically, emotionally, spiritually. But sometimes the detours on the way to our goals actually make us stronger. There are times that you have to go backwards to make progress. I heard Alison Levine talk one time about climbing Mount Everest. She said that acclimating to Everest's thin air is a long and frustrating but very necessary process to even have a shot at reaching the 29,035-foot summit. You see, at the top of Mount Everest, the air holds a third of the oxygen than at sea level. And so if you were dropped off at the top of the mountain by a helicopter, you would face certain death. And so instead what they do is they typically climb from their base camp to camp one and then back down to base camp. And they rest. And after a couple days, then they'll climb back to camp two, a little bit higher, and then back down to base camp again and rest. And then one day, they'll actually climb 9 hours up to camp three, 9 hours, only to descend all the way back down to base camp again to rest. And she said this part of the climb is incredibly frustrating, physically and emotionally. But then she said something very profound. She said, "We tend to think progress is defined by forward motion. But sometimes you have to go backwards to reach your end goal. That even though you're going backwards, you're still making progress because it's strengthening your body to withstand the elevation. And without that backward motion, you would die." That's what Caleb's saying here. He's saying everyone else complained, everyone else whined, everyone else quit, and everyone else ultimately died in the desert, but not me. I'm just as strong today as I was back then. That the backward motion through the desert actually helped me out, and now I'm ready to fight for my promised inheritance. You know we're becoming soft, right? I mean, for us in these days, everything has to be convenient. It has to be comfortable at our fingertips. We don't fight for stuff anymore. Something isn't fulfilling, we just get rid of it. We've forgotten how to fight for our marriage, to fight for the truth, to fight for a job. And Caleb said, the desert actually made me stronger. And you say, well, how does that happen? How is that possible? I mean, when you're exhausted and you're thirsty, how do you not get beaten down by that? And here's the key. We need to peek into verse 12 to get it. But Caleb says, the key is that the Lord is with me. You see, we have an outside resource that makes us strong. And here was the difference with Caleb. He had that different spirit, remember? He said, I can be strong because my God is strong. You guys, you want to persevere? Find your chair. Press into God. He is strong, so you can be strong. Look at verse 12. Caleb says, "So now, give me this hill country of which the Lord spoke on that day. For you heard on that day how the Anakim were there with great fortified cities. And it may be that the Lord will be with me. And I shall drive them out, just as the Lord said." And so Joshua blessed him, and he gave Hebron to Caleb for an inheritance. And therefore Hebron became the inheritance of Caleb to this day, because he wholly followed the Lord. There's that phrase again. Wholly followed the Lord, the God of Israel. Which brings us to the third key. That when you're tempted to abandon, get focused. Caleb was looking up at that city in Hebron that he'd looked up at all those years before. And that funny spiritual prompting from God came over him again like deja vu from all those years ago in the vineyard. He knew that up there on that mountain, that the Anakim, that's the giants, they were still there, just where he left them. He knew that the thick walls and the sophisticated weapons, they're all still up there. But that stuff, you see, was never Caleb's focus. The other 10 spies, that was their focus. They said, we're not able to go up against these people. They are stronger than we. That's an important phrase, stronger than we. You see, they were overcome with fear, and they said, it's time to abandon this mission. It's time to go back to Egypt. But here's where Caleb had always been different. The others pictured themselves against the giants, and the giants looked big. Caleb pictured his God against the giants, and the giants looked small. You see, it was a matter of focus for Caleb. Would he focus on the giants or would he focus on his God? And Caleb woke up every day and he had to decide, what will the focus be today? Because if I focus on my problems, if I focus on the giants or this desert, I will surely be tempted to turn back and to abandon this mission, to abandon the promise of God. But if I focus on God, I can walk forward in confidence. And so I ask you today, where's your focus? Because the only way to persevere is to keep our focus on God. The author of Hebrews in chapter 12, verses 1 and 2 says, let us run with, here's that word, perseverance, the race marked out for us. Here's the focus. Fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith. You know, I changed the title of this sermon in the middle of the week this week. It used to be supernatural endurance, but I changed it to supernatural perseverance because there's a difference. Endurance is just patiently kind of getting through. But perseverance adds to that an absolute assurance and certainty that what we are looking for is going to happen. Perseverance is more than just hanging on. It's not just crossing our fingers and hoping that the desert time will end soon. It's not even just being patient. Perseverance is our supreme effort of refusing to believe that our hero is going to be conquered. It's walking forward with the supernatural confidence that our God is going to win. And that's what Caleb did. He had that different spirit. God saw it from the beginning. And when you focus on God instead of your problems, eventually God will position you to fulfill your dream. And you'll look around the promised land and you'll say, I've got some business to finish. And so Caleb reminds us today that you're never too old to take a new mountain, and it's never too late for God to fulfill his promise. He's never late. How long do you typically wait for God before you give up? Is it 6 months, a year? How about 45 years? Caleb just kept looking ahead and not back. He wasn't frustrated because he was facing forward. And maybe you're frustrated today. You're waiting. But when you're waiting on a promise, don't look back, because if you look back, you may have opportunity to go back and you'll end up missing all that God has for you up ahead. Well, this story ends with Caleb and his people going to the Hebron, chasing out the giants. He sends them retreating to the west, and they actually join forces and intermarry with another people called the Philistines. Ever heard of them? And a few generations later, an Israelite kid named David, who would one day be king, he would confront a Philistine named Goliath who had benefited from some large people in his gene pool. And one more time, a big giant with big weapons and a big army was no match for a big God and one small obedient servant. The giants were sent running once again. Guys, there's territory that God wants you to possess. There are new heights that God wants you to reach. That goes for you. That goes for your family. That goes for your ministry. That goes for your business. But some of you are in a desert today, and it feels like the giants are winning. And the question is, will you learn to obey when you're in the desert? Will you learn to trust God? Will you obey him one day at a time? Will you recognize that God's not in a hurry? Will you persist in prayer when you would rather not? Will you perform little acts of faith and charity when you just don't feel like it? Will you love your enemy? Will you honor God through your words? Will you stay faithful in worship? Will you stay connected with the godly circles of people in your life? Will you focus on your God and not your giants? Will you learn to go deeper and learn to grow stronger and learn to get focused and learn to persevere when you're in the deserts of your life? And I'm just convinced that if we ever needed a dose of supernatural perseverance, it's right now. People are willing to give up these days at the drop of a hat. The wussification of Christianity in America is reaching new depths by the minute. We've forgotten God's call. We've forgotten his resourcing for supernatural perseverance. And we come and say, oh, that woman looked at me funny when I came to volunteer at church. I know she was judging me, so I'm just done serving for a while. What? My son didn't get along with anyone in the youth group, so we switched churches, and we didn't get along with anyone there either, so we just gave up on church. Or that pastor made some comments that made me think that he's a left-winger or a right-winger or fill in the blank, and I could never sit under someone's teaching that doesn't believe exactly how I believe. We have forgotten the benefit of sacrificial, selfless, long-suffering, supernatural perseverance. And I wish Caleb could stand up before you today and remind you. He would say, I was 100% faithful to God. I was all in. And so God made me a promise, and then he exited stage left for 45 years. And during those years of waiting, I walked through famines and droughts and enemy armies breathing down our necks and plagues and insurrections and disease and betrayals and about 600,000 funerals of my closest friends. And I'm here to tell you that I didn't give up. I went deeper and I didn't get weaker. I got stronger and I didn't abandon my God. I stayed focused on His promises. Now remind me again why you want to give up. Because I'm here to tell you that God's still there and He will never leave you and He will never forsake you. In fact, I'd like to close today by reading these words together from the prophet Isaiah, chapter 40. Because wherever you are today, I just want you to stand up right now. Girard, Commons, Harbor Creek, at your computer screen, wherever you are, let's stand up and I want to read these words together about what God's up to when we're in the desert. Let's read them right now, starting in verse 28. Have you not known? Have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He does not faint or grow weary. His understanding is unsearchable. He gives power to the faint, and to him who has no might, he increases strength. Even youths shall faint and be weary, and young men shall fall exhausted. But they who wait for the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint.